Here we go!
Welcome to the Nintendo Power Zone. We are a videocast / podcast dedicated to bringing you the best Nintendo-related topics. As always, I'm your host, Nice One, and joining me is the full staff of co-hosts. We have Jada, Winsong, and Blues. Welcome back, gentlemen.
How's it going, guys? Glad to be here.
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. Glad to be back on the show once again.
All right. Well, today we have a lot of news to cover, and in today's discussion, we're going to ask the question on a lot of people's minds. Did Ubisoft save Star Fox from Nintendo? So before we do all that, we're going to go ahead and we're going to slide right into the powered up news. And I want to start off with a big story that's getting a lot of attention, but I'm here to dash people's hopes. So Super Dragon Ball Heroes is coming to the Nintendo Switch. For those who don't know, Super Dragon Ball Heroes is an arcade game that is Japan exclusive. This game is celebrating its 8th year anniversary this year. This game is batshit crazy the way they do it. So they basically take every character from Dragon Ball history and then add a few of their own characters, and they put them in this world where power scales are out the window, and that says a lot when you consider that Dragon Ball has power scales that are already out the window, especially if you're talking about Dragon Ball Super. But yeah, so basically you play as the hero character Beat, and it's a card game, and these card games function very similar to Amiibo. They have little NFC chips. You put the card on the arcade cabinet. That card then comes to life within the game, and then you can play as one of any number of characters that have been released in the game. This is the game that made Bardock Super Saiyan for the first time, and they are right now celebrating in their 8th year anniversary with an awesome anime series that each episode runs about anywhere between 8 and 10 minutes. Very cool, and it's very reflective of what's in the game. So you see a lot of cool things in this game, like weird fusions, like with like future Gohan fusing with future Trunks to make Gohonks or Gohinks or whatever. You see things like Super Saiyan 4 Vegito, which is going to launch, I think, next month, which is very awesome. You have all these cool new characters, and you have these nice story arcs, and the game does tie in a lot to Dragon Ball Xenoverse 1 and 2, so if you're fans of those games, a lot of the content covered in Super Dragon Ball Heroes is actually familiar to you if you've played those. Here's the problem, though. As exciting news as this is not the first Super Dragon Ball Heroes game to be released on a Nintendo console. The Nintendo 3DS has actually had 4 individual releases of Dragon Ball Super Heroes. None of them have come to the US market. The reason for that being is because this is based on an arcade game that Bandai Namco has explicitly stated this game is for Japan only. And the same actually applies to that anime series like that I was just speaking about. They said this is for Japan audiences only, but that hasn't stopped a lot of like importers and bootleggers to find ways to bring these products to the States. So we've seen the anime take its place on YouTube. It's getting millions of views using fan dubs. And as far as the games are concerned, there are a lot of people who import them and just play the game without reading the game, essentially. So my thought process here is that because they've had 4 games released on Nintendo's consoles, the 3DS, and they have not released one stateside, we will not see this game stateside either. Which is a shame because I would really like to play this game. The only really good thing about this news is that the Nintendo Switch is region free. So at the very least, you can import this game any way you choose. You can go to AmiAmi or any other import site and you can play this game. Whether or not you'll be able to read and play this game is an entirely different story. I really wish this game was coming stateside officially, but I'm here to dash you guys' hopes. Don't bet on it.
And yeah, it's going to be a crapshoot. One of the nice things that I will give credit to for Bandai Namco is the fact that they have been releasing English and Chinese subtitles for games that do get released to the Singaporean Asia area. So in theory, what they could possibly do with this game is release it there, and then you'll be able to import the Asia version with the English subtitles. They've got a pretty decent track record of doing it, They've done SD Gundam G Generation Genesis for the PlayStation 4 and PlayStation Vita. That's came out about a year or so ago. They've done Super Robot Tyson, which is the game that's never going to see stateside because of licensing issues. Upcoming game that they're doing for the Switch is Kamen Rider Climax Scramble ZEO, which comes out at the end of November. But it's a crapshoot because even though they've done those games, they didn't actually put the English subtitles in for the Switch re-release of SD Gundam G Generation. So who knows? It'll be nice to see in coming months whether or not we get some verification on that front, but don't lose all hope just yet. There might be a sliver of hope, even though it's probably won't happen. But we'll see.
I just do not see any way this game comes to the States. The Bandai Namco has been really explicit on this game remaining Japan exclusive. And I understand that because for the most part, this is an arcade game. The audience has been built up over 8 years to be exclusively Japanese. The only place you can buy the cards is in Japan. The only place you can play this game is in Japan. So it makes sense that they just keep it, you know, the way it is. If I believe that if America still had a larger arcade presence, we would have been seeing this game all over the country in every major arcade, because you can always kind of bank on Dragon Ball to be successful, you know, in any venture, even if it's bad. With the exception of Dragon Ball Evolution. We don't have to talk about that. But still,
yeah.
We can, like, Dragon Ball is a proven commodity in, you know, worldwide. This game would sell crazily if they did do it. I just don't see it happening.
Yeah, it'd be tough. Let's say that, for sake of argument, they do decide to publish it in America. The subtitles and the translations is not just what they'd have to do. A lot of people forget that they'd also have to sink millions of dollars into a marketing campaign, which, you know, that's a lot of money. And culturally speaking,
manufacturing more cards. They would have to manufacture more cards. Unless they do what Starlink is, which we're going to talk about a little bit later, where you can either play the game with the physical, you know, ships and characters, or you can play the game digitally. If they can digitally recreate every card in the game so that you can play like that, that's an easier hurdle. But I think part of the appeal of that game is the collectible cards that you get with them and the rarity of those cards and how awesome it is to just collect things sometimes.
Yeah, definitely. But I mean, like, what that really all translates to is it's a lot of risk. And when you're a company, especially a Japanese company, you're typically very risk averse. You want to make sure that you make calculated risks. And I've got to side with them in this sense, where it'd be a very big risk to publish it in North America right now.
Although releasing it on a console like the Switch is such a perfect idea. I love that thought process. It's like, hey, let's take one of our most popular games and put it on a portable platform and make it accessible like this. Because as it is right now, if you're not playing the arcade, you know, if you're playing the arcade version exclusively, you have to leave and dedicate your time to go out and play this game. And I know you could probably find it at every major arcade in you know, in Japan. That being said, though, that's still a whole lot of, like, time-consuming stuff to be able to play this game portably. And if it works like the 3DS version where, like, the progress you save, because the cards are read and write, you can save the progress from the 3DS version and then apply that in the arcade version. If it works identically to that process, that is an awesome thing. Especially since I think the arcade versions get updated far more frequently than the console versions.
Yeah.
All right. Any thoughts on this, Brennan, or should we move on to the next?
I'm not too acquainted with Dragon Ball. I think you guys are right. It's kind of risky. There's clearly an established market in Japan, not so much in America. And to sort of help build a market for it here, you would have, like you said, throw in those couple thousand, 100,000, whatever marketing campaign, even then that might not sway a lot of audiences to buy it. And you're asking for, it's not per se toys to life like Starlink is, but it's cards to life, which I feel like in America, maybe all over, is a very concerning market unless you have that presence that you already have in Japan. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think it's just too risky as well.
How successful the Animal Crossing Amiibo cards were, and the there was another game that did it as well. The Mario sports game on the 3DS that also used the Amiibo cards. I wonder how successful they did and if Bandai Namco tracked those numbers and decided, hey, this is not worth the risk. You'd think they would assess something like that, though, if we're being 100% honest.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So that being said, we'll move on to the next subject. This one is clickbaity. Huawei announces a new phone that is better than the Nintendo Switch. So last week, Chinese manufacturer Huawei, they make high-end smartphones, they announced that they are coming out with a new gaming cell phone called the Mate 20X, which I guess actually stands for Mate 20 Pro. So this phone, the way Huawei positioned it is that it will be a direct competitor to the Nintendo Switch. It's going to have a 7.2-inch screen, making it 1 inch bigger than the Nintendo Switch's tablet. It's going to have a 5,000 milliamp battery for up to 23 hours of video play and double the gameplay of the Nintendo Switch, so roughly 6 hours of gameplay. And the caveat is that this game also has a gamepad that looks very much like a Joy-Con with, like, an L-shaped Joy-Con. Has an analog stick and a D-pad, but there's only one, and that would go on the left side of the phone, which would functionally be the top of the phone. And on the right side of the phone, you will be using an analog stick for button presses. So they have outright said that this is better than the Nintendo Switch, though they did not announce any type of gaming software for the device. Things that I think are instantly wrong with this, with their claims, is that 7.2-inch screen, that is too big for a cell phone. Mm-hmm. Like, I thought the Galaxy Note 9, I thought the Galaxy Note 9 was a large phone, but when you're talking about a tablet here, this is a tablet. This is a tablet phone. This is a massive phone. That is too big.
That reminds me of those memes that you'd see where people were holding iPhones up to their heads and being like, hello, hello. You know what I'm talking about? Shit, that's funny. I hadn't thought about that.
7.2 inches is a big cell phone. That is, like, ultimately, I want my phone to fit in my pocket still. Aside from that, like, their claim is entirely subjective. Like, without any kind of software announcements, like, it's almost impossible to determine whether or not something is better than something else. Now, granted, I expect it to have a better battery life than the Switch, because ultimately, if you buy this thing, you're going to want to make phone calls and stuff, right? You want to do everything that you do on, like, a Galaxy phone or an iPhone. That being said, though, how long is it before this company gets sued by the same company that's suing Nintendo? Because,
oh God, yes.
If I'm being honest, this is more of an idea theft than what Nintendo did. Because this almost looks exactly like the Game Vice. That's the name of the company. Yeah, this looks exactly like the Game Vice, except that they kind of chopped it in half. Like, we don't have the second half of the controller. And that's the other thing that bothers me, is that they want you to use a stylus to do button presses. The whole point of, like, the Nintendo Switches, even though it does have a capacitive touchscreen, is that I can use buttons to play games. That's what makes the Switch superior to cell phone gaming, is the fact that you can press buttons. And obviously the software content is much higher. You're not getting a Breath of the Wild, a Super Mario Odyssey, an ARMS, a Splatoon 2. You're not getting those on the Huawei Mate 20 Pro. Or all of this is subjective. And the phone costs $1,000.
Yeah.
Ooh, I'll take my $300 for my Nintendo Switch. I need a
Yeah, so even if the product were better than the Nintendo Switch, the price point is clearly not. Like, okay, so on day one of the Nintendo Switch, I bought the Switch, I bought the charging Joy-Con grip, and I bought a Pro Controller, and 1-2 Switch, and Breath of the Wild. I spent about $540 on day one on one
About
Switch.
right.
I bought two Switches, one for me, one for my fiance. So I actually bought, but all she wanted on day one was the Switch and the Pro Controller. So, yeah, but if you were to go all out and buy all the accessories that you wanted, and if I include a game case, I spent $560. I spent $560 on the Switch. This cell phone is $1,000. That's still $460 more than everything I spent on the Switch, and that includes the taxes.
I mean, you also want to think about maybe, let's say I want a phone case for my what Huawei Mate 2.020 Pro, whatever that is. I want maybe a case for that. I want a charger for it. I want et cetera, et cetera. And so there's gonna be added costs on top of that. I mean,
Yeah,
phone
but
service.
won't a case just interfere with the fact that you're going to be attaching,
Yeah.
for all intents and purposes, in an L-shaped Joy-Con?
No,
Yeah.
you're probably right. But there's a lot of issues with that, with the Switch itself, with cases too nowadays. There's a lot of weird cases and grips that interfere with that stuff too. So we're not avoiding that problem either. One thing I think is just that, like, you can't enter the video game market and compete with Nintendo, but still have your other foot in this cell phone market. If you're going to try and compete with Nintendo in the video game space, you have to be fully committed, I think. Like we said before, you need actual physical buttons to compete. You need the game library to sustain it. You're going to need the support on phones in general for higher grade games. That just isn't there. Like Android and iOS are becoming great formats for gaming, but they are not. They're not on the same level as Switch, PS4, or Xbox One in any
Well,
way right now.
that's ultimately the point here, is that mobile phones and most other portable mobile consoles that try to compete with Nintendo's portable consoles always lack software. They don't get the same quality of software that Nintendo, and their third parties produce for these consoles. You are not like you're seeing some games, like you'll see like games like Layton and Yokai Watch, Phoenix Wright. You'll see games like that end up on mobile games, but if we're being fair, those games suit the they
More
suit the
mobile
those style of
Android.
games, they suit mobile games. They fit
Yeah.
right in because they're like point and click adventures, or they require very little button presses to begin with, and there's something that a touchscreen can easily replicate. But there's no way on God's green earth are you going to be able to do all those crazy super jumps that you can do in Mario Odyssey on a cell phone. Like,
And I
there are
think
limitations
that's
to the
where
software.
and I that's another thing, like, you have to fully commit. The fact that they're one foot in the gaming industry and one foot in the cell phone industry, I feel like it's really hurt them in both the cell phone and the gaming fields. And I think
This kind of reminds me of the N-Gage.
Yeah, I was
I don't
actually gonna talk about that. The N-Gage, for all y'all youngins, was a Nokia invention that was a mobile phone gaming thing hybrid that was supposed
Taco.
to kill the what? What is it? The Game Boy
The Game Boy
Advance?
Advance. The Game Boy
Yeah.
Advance.
And after like a year and a crap ton of money sunk into it, they only had like a dozen games, maybe like 20, and most of them were shit. It did not go well, and
They
it's
did have
like.
Splinter Cell, though. The Splinter Cell game was all right.
Yeah. I mean, they had like one or two okay games, but most of them were not good.
I mean, the very first attempt in smartphone gaming phones, I think, is still like the best attempt in the Sony Xperia Play. nothing's going to top that. Even that just failed completely.
Yeah.
Well, didn't that basically just take PS1 era games and just kind of throw them on cell phone software?
It also had Minecraft, I think, though. So there's
look,
that.
I don't think cell phone games. I used to be adamantly opposed to them until developers started getting smarter and started making games that suit, you know, cell phones, like games like Angry Birds or Plants vs. Zombies, to a lesser extent, games like Pokemon Go, really utilize the software in great ways. I have no issues when companies make software that suits the platform. The problem is that they're positioning themselves as a direct competitor and saying that they're better, but they have no claim to that because they, you know, outside of hardware specifications, if we're being honest, was the PlayStation Vita a superior device than the Nintendo 3DS? Yeah.
Oh, 110%. It had an OLED fucking screen. Like, the colors and the deeply saturated dark blues were fucking fantastic. It was a phenomenal system.
Well, but last episode we talked about this directly, is that the PlayStation Vita was a superior console with bad software, and a lack of support. If the same thing happens to the Mate 20 Pro, you are going to see the exact same thing that happened to the Vita. Now, I don't know how much more damning it is for a cell phone company to make these claims and jump into this market if they can't completely justify that with software. So ultimately, we'll find out where this goes.
Yeah. I think that's all we really have to say about that. Without the lack of support, like, yeah, it's more powerful, but until we see that support, that software on there, it's not going to win any hearts, win any sales. And I think that's, we don't know if it will. I think we're right now assuming it doesn't have any because it's in that mobile space, but I don't think it will actually have it. We'll wait and see. We'll report on it maybe later. I don't know. Any thoughts, Jaden Winsong?
I mean, I can't. I mean, Huawei is a really big company, sure, but I can't imagine them having enough clout in the actual game industry itself to pull some super big exclusives. I just can't imagine that happening.
That's probably accurate.
I think the best they'll get is like Clash of Clans on the Mate 20X because that's what people want to be the Switch killer.
They've already shown a Arena Valor, which we just got on the Nintendo Switch a couple days ago. Or
it's not like Arena
ago.
Of Valor's new, though. Like, yeah, Arena of Valor on the Mate 20, that's the Switch killer. 110%. Like, what the fuck are they thinking?
Well, we'll see where this goes. I ultimately think that they've made a pretty bold claim. I don't think they are going to be able to justify that with software. But, hey, you know, if you're going to come out swinging, swing for the fences, right? So we might as well just go ahead and move on to the next topic. So our next three stories are going to tie directly in with our main topic. So I want to kind of quick hit these ones. So we're going to talk about Starlink Battle for Atlas in our news. And the first story comes from who's the original source on this? OKCool.com. So, or .ca, they did an interview with the developers of Starlink Battle for Atlas, and in it, they said that they started working on the Star Fox content before they had gotten approval from Nintendo. So basically, it was always the plan to bring Star Fox into this game, and at E3 2017, when they unveiled the game for the first time, after they unveiled the game, they had a sit-down with Miyamoto and the Star Fox team, at E3, and that's when they presented them with a 3D printed R-Wing that they basically painted a base gray, and were like, we want to add Star Fox to the game. The game is going to utilize toys to life. We think Star Fox would fit in perfectly in this universe. And after, you know, some meetings and some back and forth, and especially after the success of Mario Rabbids Kingdom Battles, Nintendo decided that this was a worthwhile venture, and they said, yeah, add Star Fox to the game. Make it exclusive to the Nintendo Switch, and we have ourselves a deal. And really interesting that they had the balls to do that. The same actually happened with Mario Rabbids Kingdom Battle. It's been reported by Davide Soliano himself that they scheduled a meeting with Nintendo, and basically they built their own character models of Mario and Luigi, and then they brought them to Nintendo to the point where, like, the models were so good that Miyamoto asked where they got the assets for the characters, and Davide had to explain, no, we made them ourselves. We built them from scratch. Like, and that, just that alone showed, Miyamoto the level of dedication that Davide Soliani had for Mario, and said, you can make this game as long as Mario doesn't jump. And, he gave him like that specific, like, restriction. But damn it, if Mario Rabbids Kingdom Battle wasn't one of my favorite games of 2017. I love that game. And the Donkey Kong DLC is just as good. Like, Ubisoft's relationship with Nintendo has been extraordinarily amazing, and I've appreciated the results. But yeah, they have some stones, though. Like, here's the game announcement. Hey, you mind if we have a real quick meeting? We want to ask you a question. We want to put Star Fox in. Like, these Ubisoft developers have balls. They have balls. Because this is copyright infringement 101. If we're being 100% honest, this is copyright infringement 101. They put him in the game already, and then they had a 3D printed model of an Arwing and said, this is our goal. This is our idea. But something about it just triggers Miyamoto in a good way. It's like, he sees these ideas and he sees the dedication. I'm like, yo, Nintendo needs to start poaching some Ubisoft developers, in my opinion.
It's funny. Yeah.
So thoughts on this. What do you guys think about them just adding Star Fox to the game without, Nintendo's approval immediately? You know,
I can think of it. I can see a situation where it started off as not even like an intention to have him in the game as an actual end production goal. Kind of like they were just building the engine, they were building some system, and some guys who happen to work at Ubisoft for old Star Fox fans are like, hey, let's just throw him in so we can fuck around in the sandbox system using an R-Wing. Wouldn't that be fun, guys? And I can imagine it starting like that and then gaining traction to the point where it's like, no, this actually is a really good idea. Let's approach Miyamoto at the next E3. You know what I mean? That I can see it happening that way. It would not be the first time that we've seen developers put stuff into their games so that they themselves could mess around with it and then remove it before the game goes live. So
I'm the kind of guy who feels like if I was going to ask Nintendo for a crossover with any of their IP, I would want to have like the finished product ready to present to them. Because it's like, okay, if I don't show them how good this is, I will worry that they won't let me play with my baby that I want. It's their baby, but, and so I want to show them that I can make it work, that it's good, it's fun, and I'm doing a faithful representation before I even pitch the idea, so that a lot of the fear is sort of out of my mind. But at the same time, it's a waste of resources and assets if you're going to make the entire game. They didn't make the entire game, I'd assume. Sparse Fox game, let's say, at that point. But it's how I personally feel like it should be done. And I get that it's copyright in assets, but it's permission first, and then allocate the resources once you get the main game done. But I don't know. I think it's great. I think it was almost a shoo-in that they would say yes. Because coming from post, post Mario Rabbids Kingdom Battle, so you have some relations there. You're showing the level of dedication not only once with Kingdom Battle, but twice with this, and they're on a very good relationship level. So I think there's a little fear there.
Mm-hmm. I can agree with that. I mean, ultimately, I feel if. Just to get a little bit off track and say a lot of what they did in the game is very Star Fox, from the way that dogfights work and even land-based combat all feels very Star Fox, especially Star Fox 64. The game plays from the pilot aspect of it, it plays very similar to Star Fox games, to the point where even the commands that you use to initiate things like doing a loop-de-loop so that you can shoot behind you is exactly the same motion that you would do in Star Fox 64. The game fundamentally works like a Star Fox game. You can see the influence of Star Fox in Starlink.
Definitely.
So it's not just it's not just paying homage in the sense that they added the character to the game. They took design cues from Star Fox. A lot of them, especially like not for nothing, Star Fox 64 is the best Star Fox game, and it took a lot of design cues from that. And it just goes to show how well they were able to it adds to them implementing Star Fox, in my opinion. It just makes the game that much better. And then the Toys to Life stuff is all secondary, in my opinion, as far as the implementation. So that was from OK Cool. Great article. If you haven't read it yet, I'll put the link in the description of the show, because it's a very good article. But moving on, there's some controversy as far as Starlink is concerned, and I feel bad about this one.
Mm-hmm.
So Ubisoft is currently investigating copies of Starlink's starter pack that don't have either the CD or the cartridge. This is bad. So this is... This game was kind of highly anticipated, especially by the Nintendo community, because of its exclusive Star Fox crossover. And they're missing copies of the game. Like, so everything else is in there, but when you open up the game case, there's no cartridge on the Switch version and no CDs in the PS4 Xbox One release. Not a good way to launch a new IP, and it was a pretty significant number of people who made this claim. Big news story. This kind of reminds me of when Splatoon 1 first got shipped and released in the UK, and a truck was hijacked.
Of the Amiibo?
Of the Amiibo, stealing like basically all the collector's editions of Splatoon 1 in the UK. Mm-hmm. To this day, there's been no answer to how that case was resolved. So I'm assuming that somewhere some guy's got a warehouse filled with Splatoon 1 collector's editions in the UK somewhere. Not a good way to launch a new IP. This is very bad. So Ubisoft did release a statement, and it goes as follows. We've been made aware that a small amount of Starlink Battle for Atlas starter packs have been shipped without a copy of the disc and or cartridge included. We are currently investigating the scope of this issue and potential solutions. In the meantime, if anyone affected by the issue, please tell them to contact Ubisoft customer service at support.ubi.com, and they will provide assistance. So I like the fact that Ubisoft is on top of it, but their statement came out pretty much the following day. The game was released the following day. They had issued a statement. Hopefully the people who bought this game and, you know, had this issue, hopefully it's been rectified for them at this point. I didn't pick up my copy of Starlink till Friday of last week. And boy, let me tell you, this wasn't something that worried me when I was opening that starter pack. I was like, is my game going to be in there? I saw a couple of things on the Reddit thread where somebody said that when he opened up his starter pack, it actually looked like somebody had cut the wrapper of the game, of the case of the game, and that's why to have been missing. This could have, so it makes me wonder at which point in production that this happened. Did this happen in the factory? Did somebody open up the game cases and remove the things, or did this happen at retail? I don't know. There's no statement saying which retailers were specifically affected by this, but it has been a global issue. This has happened all over the world. And on top of that, Starlink got delayed in China for various reasons. So as anticipated as I think this game was, they're stumbling right out of the gate. So yeah, big issues for Ubisoft in this particular instance. Any thoughts on this?
Yeah, it's just unfortunate to have happened. Like, you're paying for a product. You're paying a premium for a product with toys, too. And then to not kind of get the product is just really crappy. It's really nice that Ubisoft is very on top of it. They're rectifying the situation, it seems. It's still just kind of lame to have happen, though. The only other thing I might think is that, I've forgotten what that one, I'm losing my train of thought today. Shoot, I had a point, and I've forgotten. Wow.
I mean, ultimately, this is not a good way to launch an IP. I think that's
what I was going to say. As a new IP, it's concerning, because this will impact the future of the series, where if we do get a sequel, it might be turned off by these people, will be turned off because of problems such as this. Sorry.
Yeah, and I enjoyed the game. I really did. And I would like to see this game get franchised by Ubisoft. But issues like this, they can really hinder the progress of the game. Mm-hmm. All right. And last but not least, let's go ahead and talk one more Starlink story before we go on break. 82% of the copies of Starlink sold in the UK were sold on the Nintendo Switch. 82%, with 9% selling on the PS4 and 1% on the Xbox One. So Xbox having the lowest install base of a game. This game only was in the top. This game did not crack the top 10 in the UK, though. It was the 14th game in their in that sales week. Still pretty good. Launched as a top 20 game. This only accounts for the UK sales figures. But I would expect to see similar sales numbers globally. Because this is the first time in a long time that the Nintendo variation of a multi-platform game is the definitive version. There are more there's more content missions on the Nintendo Switch version than on any other version. Brendan and I were talking about this last weekend, how this probably could have been done very similarly. The way that Star Fox was added to the game probably could have been replicated with characters like Ratchet and Clank for the PS4 edition, or Master Chief or Marcus Fenix for the Xbox version. Those characters could, especially Master Chief for Xbox, could have been implemented in a very similar way that they implement the Star Fox. Now, ultimately, this goes without saying that the reason this happened is based on the relationship that Ubisoft and Nintendo have curated with one another over the last 30 years of gaming, making games. But yeah, the Nintendo Switch edition is the definitive edition of Starlink. You have the most content, and you have the exclusive Arwing and Star Fox. So it makes 100% sense that 82% of the game was sold on the Nintendo platform. And honestly, I think that's awesome too, because this is the only version of the game that's portable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thoughts, guys?
So, like you said before, you're getting a lot more content. You're getting the Star Fox content, the Star Fox toys, and the portability. When this game was first shown off in E3 2017, I was kind of like, I want to try and get this. This looks fun, looks unique. And I just knew I was going to get the Switch version because of the portability. And then, of course, E3 2018, they had Star Fox, and it's like, okay, well, of course, I need it for Switch now. But I was telling you, I don't really think. So I originally used the words that I almost feel like the other systems got shafted. And I kind of corrected myself saying that maybe not shafted, but because if you didn't play the Switch version, you would not know what you were missing. And I think that's kind of the beauty of it. But if you play the Switch version and go back and play the other versions, you're like, well, why didn't I just play the Switch version? This is so much better on the Switch. And so that's... The content doesn't hurt the game if you don't have a Switch and you want the game and you have to get on the system you have. It's still a great game. There's a lot of fun, a lot of good content, but the definitive version is still the Switch version.
I've been so tempted to see what the PlayStation and Xbox version look like, because spoiler territory here for the game. Star Fox is added right at the beginning of the mm-hmm. game, the Star Fox team. Like, you have the opening cutscene, which I'm 99% sure is identical to a point. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the cutscene on the Switch version, that's when they integrate Fox McCloud and everybody else.
Yeah, yeah. That's one thing I was going to talk about once we actually get into it. Is that like the cutscenes that Star Fox are in are seamlessly integrated into the existing cutscenes of the story. Like how they kind of do it is they just sort of pan out further than you might in the original cutscene, and you see the Star Fox crew in their R-Wings, or you know, they're in the room at the beginning and then they leave the room conveniently when the story talk happens. But the cutscenes are like two cutscenes where it's with Star Fox and it's cut separate. It's the whole cutscene is rendered with Star Fox in it, and then they probably just cut it at certain points on the other version, which is beautiful if you're playing the Switch version, and you wouldn't notice the difference if you're playing the other versions.
But I'm sure somebody's made a video of it on YouTube already. Yeah. If anybody in the chat sees it, please link it to me because I would like to see the differences. But
Would as well.
Because, Brenda's right. They are seamlessly implemented into
and they're in, like, almost every cutscene as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a few cutscenes that they're not in that kind of stand out a little bit. Like, without going too much into spoilers, there's a big moment in the game where the crew leaves the solar system that they're in. And Star Fox and the crew are dramatically not there, and you feel like would have been nice to have them there because it's such a big moment in the story of the game. But that being said, though, it's not that important to the overall plot of the game that Star Fox isn't there at that particular moment, because what would him and his team be doing at that point? Well, the only person who'd be of any value in that section of the in that story segment would be Slippy, because he's the tech head of the team. But yeah, like 82%, I think that's really phenomenal, especially for Nintendo. It's nice for them to have the best version of something. It just is. How many times have we seen it go the other way, where the Nintendo version of a game is so pared down that you don't want to play it? Like, how many times have you seen a game come out on a Nintendo platform and it's just the worst possible version? The games that really stick out to me are like the Spider-Man games of the PS2 of the PS3 era, like the ones that came out, like I guess games like Shattered Dimensions. They get like a Nintendo Switch PS2 version of them, and they'd be side-scrolling games, whereas the PS3 version would be like this open world 3D game, full 3D game, and you're just like, what the hell happened here? Why is this a side scroller? Like, what? Why even make this game?
I
used to get so mad at that. Like, and I realized that from a technical aspect, there are reasons for that. But Lord have mercy, to turn a 3D open world game into a 2D platformer is just disgusting. So yeah, I don't feel bad if you don't have the Nintendo Switch version. Like, you're getting a game that is equally well designed without the Star Fox content. Mm-hmm. Like, but you're just getting that much more out of it if you have the Nintendo Switch version. So yeah, big ups to Ubisoft for taking the initiative to make this happen and make the Nintendo Switch version the best possible version of the game.
I think this is the best Nintendo definitive version since probably Soul Calibur 2 on GameCube.
Yeah, probably. That's about right.
Man, who do the Xbox have in Soul Calibur? They had like Spawn,
something like that. I don't remember that far back.
I don't know. I my GameCube version.
I don't even remember who the character. I feel like it was like Spawn for the Xbox version, and it's not important. Soul Calibur best played on the GameCube. Anyhow, yeah,
agreed.
All right. So before we go on break, I just want to go ahead and shout out all the sources we use for today's news topic. So Today we use Silicon Era, Gematsu, MyNintendoNews.com, GoNintendo.com, NintendoLife.com, Express.co.uk, US Gamer, and Nintendo Wire, and obviously the OKCool.ca for all of the amazing Starlink news that we got. So yeah, shout outs to all those publications for, you know, having great articles that we could go ahead and discuss here on today's episode. So guys, we're going to take a 5-minute break, and when we come back, we pose the question that's been on a lot of people's minds. Did Ubisoft save Star Fox from Nintendo? Don't go anywhere. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Nintendo Power Zone. If you guys are just joining us, I am your host, Nice One, and I'm joined by my co-host, Jaden Winsong and Blues. And now it's time to get into our discussion, and we have a loaded question to start with. The question is, did Ubisoft save Star Fox from Nintendo? Like I said, really loaded question, but I want to set some ground rules. We are not here to determine whether Starlink itself is a good game. We're here to determine the Star Fox content within Starlink. Did Ubisoft utilize Star Fox and his team better in this game than Nintendo did in a game like Star Fox Zero? I don't want to go ahead and give my opinions right off the bat. I want to go ahead and open the floor. So who has any thoughts? Let's go ahead and jump right in.
So I kind of wanted to talk about what Nintendo's been doing wrong with Star Fox first. We can talk about it later, but to simply answer your questions, I think Ubisoft obviously did a great job making things, true to character for Star Fox. It really does seem like they would be in these scenarios. They meld very seamlessly. In terms of a game, Starlink as a game is just a natural element for Star Fox. The dog fighting, the planetary travel, and even some of the interplanetary travel is just a natural fit. And so they just meld really well by instinct. A intergalactic game featuring intergalactic game characters just works. In terms of a formula, the more modern open world formula is good, I think, for a game like Starlink. It's not the traditional Star Fox setting or formula we're used to. And I don't dislike it. I think it's a good fit for Star Fox. Maybe potentially look at that for future Star Fox games. As a Star Fox game, it's not traditional. It works well, and I like it.
That being said, I said this in the news segment of today's episode, is that you can clearly see the inspiration that they took from Star Fox. The way they implemented things like space combat, the dogfighting, is almost identical to a game like Star Fox 64, which, like I said in the news segment, is the best Star Fox game, fight me. And even the ground combat when you're on a specific planet is very reminiscent of like those stages in the Star Fox games where you're playing on like, you know, when the R-Wing is hovering low to the ground, or when you're in the why can't I remember the name of the tank?
The Landmaster.
Landmaster. Yes.
Come on, guys.
Yes. So like, fail. I'm so sorry.
I got Star Fox 64. You don't even know the name of the Landmaster. Come on.
It's been a while. Yes, I had it in my head earlier, and then it slipped me. But yes, it's very reminiscent to gameplay, like when you're in the hover mode in the R-Wing, mm-hmm. or when you're in the Landmaster. Mm-hmm. you know, when you're dogfighting, the input commands are near identical, with the exception of doing a barrel roll. For some reason, instead of using the left and right triggers,
you double tap A, and
a directional input.
Yeah.
But doing the quick turn, the loop to loop turn, that's identical. And you can just see the inspiration that they took from Star Fox game, and it doesn't just apply to Star Fox or Fox McCloud himself. Every character pilots identically. You have some advantages to choosing other characters. Like some characters are faster, their ships are more maneuverable, some are slower, but they have better firepower, et cetera, et cetera. But you do see that they implemented a lot of game design from Star Fox and applied it with other genres that are more suited to open world games. But you see the design influences that they took. It's a weird thing.
I almost wonder if it's not design influences, but this is just a standard that if you're going to do that loop-to-loop turn, given the setting, that's just how it should be done. I think Star Fox just discovered that that's how it should be done ahead of a lot of others, and so we relate that back to Star Fox thought of it first, but I think that's just naturally how we should make game control schemes in this kind of setting.
Yeah, no. And you know that goes for games that are not just Star Fox. I mean, I do not think that there's any coincidence that we see like 3D platforming games, for example, return to ideas that were pushed by, you know, Mario 64 or Banjo-Kazooie. I think, you know, that era really set a lot of ground foundations and standards that we're seeing pop up again today.
Now, that's kind of the reason why I chose this topic. On top of the fact that I was highly anticipating Starlink on the Nintendo Switch because of the Star Fox thing, I was looking at the Star Fox games that have come out. And there have been far fewer Star Fox games than most of the other popular Nintendo IP, which goes that says a lot, because the Star Fox brand maintains its popularity despite the fact that it's one of the underutilized franchises that Nintendo has. If I'm looking at core releases for Star Fox, we have Star Fox, Star Fox 64, Star Fox Adventure, Star Fox Assault, Star Fox Command, Star Fox Zero, and the recently released Star Fox 2, but we all know the story about Star Fox 2 getting canceled after it was complete. Like, that game has only seen the light of day because of the Nintendo, the SNES Classic Edition, the Super NES Classic Edition. Like, the only reason we've seen that is because Nintendo wanted a big selling point for that particular console. It's the one thing that they had that they can't do on any other classic systems that they can release. There are no 100% completed games like that on the NES or the 64.
I wonder if it has to do with the era that we're in. Like, the thought occurred to me that we saw the most growth and the most games of Star Fox during the GameCube era. And when we look at that era, it was still an era where, like, anthropomorphic animal mascots were still a thing, right? But then when we move forward into, like, the 360 PS3 era, and even now, I think, still has that. But it was very kind of the hyper-realistic, everyone's got to be human, shooting Call of Duty guns at each other kind of zeitgeist of that particular era. And so part of me wonders if that's one of the reasons why we just didn't see a Star Fox, was, you know, mascot characters just weren't really a thing.
True, but on the flip side, within that same, like, era, we saw Nintendo franchises get redefining. They redefined themselves with new genres. Look at Metroid. Yeah, it went from a platformer to a third person or first person shooter. Donkey Kong went from a sort of puzzle based platformer to a traditional side scrolling platformer. That really ups the difficulty. But we also see Donkey Kong expand into rhythm based games and motion based games. Like, we've seen Nintendo redefine these characters.
Star Fox got the Zelda treatment, though.
Yeah. And I think it's easier for, like, Donkey Kong to go into Congo Bongo rhythm style of games because he's an ape. I can't, like, for example, I cannot imagine a game with Fox McCloud and crew doing, like, Dance Dance Revolution crap, for example.
It's, you know what I'm saying? It has to do with a base malleability, I think. So with Mario,
But if you look, but the recent, what was the recent rumor of that happened earlier this year? Was that Rockstar
Studios, it was D-Kong Racing, Star Fox.
Star Fox Racing, like,
yeah.
Star Fox might not be as malleable as Donkey Kong and Mario and Zelda, but there are other genres that are suited to redefine the character. Now, if that's because Nintendo doesn't want to compete with their own IP such as F-Zero and Mario Kart, that's a shame.
Well, because I do with F-Zero. Come on.
Well, yeah. But still, I mean, like, there is a space racer that Nintendo does, you know, own legitimately, that is their own IP. Like, there are avenues that they could take Star Fox. Now, ultimately,
could we see the F-Zero James McCloud in Star Fox Racing?
I would actually kind of like to see that.
That'd be pretty cool.
He does take a lot of design cues from Fox McCloud's father. But no, I want to get back on track. So in 2015, we saw the release of Star Fox Zero. Star Fox Zero was kind of panned before it even came out. Like, the graphics were unimpressive and the motion controls were an impedance to the overall gameplay. It was too gimmicky with, like, the transforming of the R-Wing into the Chicken Walker, as they so dubbed it on the internet. The gimmick of having to use the little drones. There were a lot of things that people had to say about Star Fox, and I think it currently sits at like a 69% on Metacritic for Star Fox Zero. And I believe that's, just do a little internet searching. Starlink Battle for Atlas Metacritic. I should have had this up. I don't know why I forgot.
Did you say Starlink? I thought you were talking about Star Fox Zero.
Yeah, but I want to compare Starlink's Metacritic. For comparison's sake, I want to take Starlink's Metacritic and compare it to. So on Metacritic, Starlink is sitting at a 75% with an 8.0 user score. And by comparison, Star Fox Zero. Yeah, apparently. And no results found. Okay, so it came out in 2016. I was mistaken. 69% on Metacritic with an average user score of 7.4. Now, two different styles of games, but within sort of the same genre, space exploration, space fighter, we're looking at a vastly different, you know, Metacritic score and user score. Like, we're seeing that if we're comparing just the two games based off of their scores alone, Starlink is the superior title. But again, I want to tie this into the Star Fox content itself. What do you guys grade the Star Fox content within Starlink Battle for Atlas? Just the Star Fox content. It's
like kind of a 1 through 10 or something?
We'll go on a 1 through 5 scale.
Let's 1 through 5? Ooh, 3.5 to 4.
I give it a 3.7. It's in that same range. The character models look great. Mm-hmm. The combat looks great. The gameplay, all that stuff feels great. Even the voice acting is really great. Where Starlink falters with the Star Fox content is that I think is the overall length and the story. Now, it's great that the story works in conjunction with the main storyline. And I think that's where the issue lies, is that the Starlink stuff is so well integrated into the Star Fox stuff that they are one and the same. So while you're doing a Star Fox mission, it is not uncommon for Star Fox to interact with characters like Mason and Carl and all the other people that are within the Starlink universe. There's a lot of character action between them. You can tell that both of these teams are combining their resources in order to help one another. But that's the hindrance there, is that stuff actually affects the well-being of the Star Fox content alone. But outside of that, the Star Fox story itself, if we were just, it's actually pretty good. Like, you know, they're after Star Wolf, who's using the technology that's presented in Starlink to basically conquer the universe. That's like his ultimate goal. It's interesting to see Star Wolf function autonomously, because up until this point, we've only seen him working with Andross in the franchise.
Yeah, he's a mercenary, so he's for hire.
Exactly. So to see him
wants to dominate the universe for himself.
Exactly. to see him working solely for himself, I think that's the interesting thing about the game, is to see the motivations that Wolf has is all very, very cool. Like, I'm tired of work. He's like, Andross is gone, and nobody's hiring me. I need to do everything for myself. And he takes some initiative. Like, he takes a lot of initiative, and that makes his storyline pretty awesome.
I do have to say, it is a bit weird that, to me, that a non... that the studio outside of Nintendo has been able to flesh out Star Wolf better than Nintendo has in the past, I don't know, God knows how long. It's kind of sad in a weird way.
I think that happens with Star Fox too. I think they fleshed out Star Fox in a way that it's like, it's not just about protecting Corneria. Star Fox, or Fox McCloud, is a much more valiant character in this game. Like, he's willing to put himself on the line for perfect strangers in this game. And we see his character development in that sense, where most of the time he's following orders. That's it. He's following orders. And in this game, he's pretty much,
he's calling the shots on his own will.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. He pretty much interjects himself against the wishes of his team. Like, Pepe has no desire to join.
To help Starlink.
Yeah, Pepe. Pepe's just tired of his shit at this point.
He makes the point. He's like, I should have retired the last time we were on Corneria. Like, and of course, and I love that too, because you see that like Pepe is like, it's always been established that he's old, but this is the first time like where like his age is like really reflected. He's like, I'm too old for this.
Which is something that they've had trouble with in the past because of the character models, you know? But I think this is one of the first instances where you can get past the character models and actually see it in his dialogue and the way the lines are delivered, and just generally the way they make him, he feels older than the rest of the crew, which I think is...
Even in his character design, I feel like...
His character design makes him look old, too.
The way his fur looks like a gray beard this time out, instead of, like, the typical... Because most of the time, it's more brownish. So, you know, especially in the older games where where textures weren't that great, like, when everybody was just a smooth surface, Pepe just looked like he fit in with the rest of them. But this time, he actually looks like he's got age and wisdom, and he's just tired. He's tired. And the utilization of these characters is great. And Star Fox Zero, I don't hate Star Fox Zero. Like, so I posted this today's episode on a Facebook chat, and a lot of people made the assumption that I hated Star Fox Zero and that I hated the direction Nintendo has been taking, you know, the franchise. That is not true. I think Star Fox Zero is a perfectly playable game. By no means, however, is it the best Star Fox game. It actually is one of the worst Star Fox games. To the point where Star Fox 2, which is a game that never should have seen the light of day, is better than Star Fox Zero. And we look at the influences of Star Fox 2 on Star Fox Zero, like the Chicken Walker and stuff like that. Like, there's a lot of Star Fox 2 and Star Fox Zero, but Star Fox 2 is the superior game running on vastly inferior hardware. It boils down to Nintendo just doesn't know where to take this character anymore, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. They don't know how to revitalize this character the way that they have revitalized Donkey Kong, Metroid, Mario, Kid Icarus. Like, they don't know where to take the franchise. And I think Ubisoft saw an opening, they saw a window, and they said, Star Fox could work in this capacity, something that pays homage to what you guys have done in the past, but something that could bring the character into a more modern contemporary. And they put Star Fox in an open universe, one where space exploration can take on many forms. He could actually be in space and have, you know, these random dogfights with outlaws, or he could be very mission objective, like he is when he's on one of the 7 planets available that you can play on within the main game. Now, granted, like, the problem with Starlink in this sense is that Starlink is very uniform. Like, there are the designs you see on one planet carry over to the other 6. So you will see the same kind of design structures. The layouts of these structures are 100% identical. Now, I think that the reason for that is because the game itself is vast. The space is very big. The planets themselves are actually fairly big as well. And there are 7 of them. There's a few of them that are smaller than others, but for the most part, the planets themselves are big. It can take hours to 100% one planet. Trust me, it took me 5 hours to 100% Vilas.
One thing that I want to actually bounce off of what you're saying here is the one thing I think that Star Fox does just so much better than Starlink is to provide interesting locations. Interesting locations. Like, there's no corn area in Starlink, and having just at least one corn area or something would be nice. But to provide more locations, more landmarks, hubs of some kind would be nice. I think there's not enough of those. There's a couple like mining outposts here and there, research squadrons here and there, but there's nothing noteworthy per se.
I think it would have been interesting for them to implement some more villains as well from the Star Fox franchise, like the pig and the monkey. Can't remember. Crystal, even. I'll take Crystal. Like, there are characters that I feel like probably would have fit in really well, considering where the storyline is going with these characters, specifically the Wolf O'Donnell stuff. You think that they would implement members of his crew better.
Yeah.
But you're right. It would have been nice to have seen some more, like, landmarks. Hell, even show where Corneria is based in the Starlink map itself. Mm-hmm. Like, how far is Corneria from Atlas? Like, how did the Star Fox team actually physically get into Atlas? It seems that they've been traveling for a while on the hunt for Wolf, but, like, you know, the way that the Starlink crew has to do it is through utilizing, you know, some sort of, like, teleportation hyperdrive just to get into Atlas themselves. Like, where, how did the Star Fox team come into that sort of technology that they could also make a journey of that, you know, scope? So yeah, I think that what Ubisoft did with Star Fox was really well implemented. But could it work as a standalone? Could they themselves take the lessons that they've learned from Starlink and apply them into a direct Star Fox game?
I don't want to see a Star Fox game that's sort of one-to-one with Starlink, though. I don't know. I don't want Star Fox to be another Starlink. I want another Starlink at Battle of Atlas at that point, you know? So my thinking would be, you know, you could take some lessons and inspiration, take some feedback from what you've done with it, but I don't want to see maybe the open world again. Maybe I don't want to see the open world, but I don't know. I don't want to see the exact same game again. Does that make sense?
I know what you're talking about.
One thing that I think might differentiate well is, you know, my favorite part about any of the Star Foxes that I like is the multiplayer. Star Fox has great multiplayer when it's good.
Especially the 64 version.
Mm-hmm, 64 and Assault had some of the best. One thing I think I talked about when we were talking about that Star Fox racing game is the potential for multiplayer with that. Like I said, that would be one of my favorite multiplayer experiences, hands down. Just looking at what we have from Diddy Kong Racing, existing Mario Kart, the world for multiplayer races in that just blows my mind. But looking at sort of maybe a more multiplayer aspect from what we have based off of Starlink, there's a two-player co-op. I actually have not had the chance to try it out, but I would imagine that it's the same as what we currently have. But how I might actually like to see a multiplayer Star Fox bees. You pick, you know, I'll be Fox, Jaden, you'll be Slippy, Nice One, you'll be Falco, and then we got Peppy, he's gonna be a AI computer or something, I don't know exactly. But we would all sort of pick it, and we would work as a team to just play co-op, and then obviously have a more traditional multiplayer versus mode as well. But I would like to see a bit more done with multiplayer, I think could be good. I think maybe make it more mission-based in that traditional Star Fox is linear arcade shooter, even though it's a rail shooter. Yeah, it's a rail shooter. That's the word. Thank you. And while maybe don't make the Ubisoft Star Fox, let's call it, completely linear on rails, but have some more linearness with the mission objectives, I guess. I don't know.
I would like to see them maintain the open world of it all. Because the traditional Star Fox games, if we go back and look at like Star Fox, Star Fox 2, Star Fox 64, like you have like that map, that HUD that you have the branching paths.
I think that
is a bygone of an era that is long since passed.
I don't think branching paths should be done, no.
Yeah.
I think I don't mind a branching path as long as it's done more organically and you have the option to go back. With the way that, like, basically how Starlink works, like how Starlink has that, when you look at the map of Starlink, which if you look at the Starlink map, it's actually really similar to the layout of a Star Fox map. If you actually go and look at the way the planets are scattered about, looks very much like the Star Fox branching paths up until you see, you know, Andross. Very similar, but more maintain that open world. So I could go to Tundria, you know, which is one of the planets that you go for your Star Fox missions, but I also have the option to go to Vilis and Haven and all that. Leave those paths. Let me pick which planet I go to next, which in Starlink, they kind of always tell you where to go next, even though you do have the option to explore any planet. They always give you direction.
But give you branching direction.
Exactly. Take the direction away from the game and allow the player to explore the universe as they see fit without that guidance. I could see that open world mixing, an open world like that would mix well with Star Fox, as long as there is something that the character can do on each one of those planets.
How about something like Mario Odyssey's sort of navigation style, where you start with, you know, your basic Cap Town, and then you go to the Jurassic World, but they're sort of smaller, open environments still. Maybe give a linear mission for both, and then after like two missions, you have a branching path, and you would go to the other one after you complete that. I think maybe a more Odyssey-style formula might be good.
True. I also want to point on this. I don't think we've discussed this yet. One point where I think Starlink completely fails is one of the things that I think Star Fox Zeros 100% succeeded in, is that's the implementation of motion controls, especially in dogfights. My last Star Fox game was Star Fox 2, but before that it was Star Fox Zero. And I have had issues since Star Fox Zero functioning without motion controls in a dogfight. I like the fact that Nintendo saw the usefulness of motion controls for that game. And I was expecting Starlink to embrace those, but the only motion controls accessible are when you are in the zoomed in mode, which makes you lose sight.
A lot of sight of all your enemies.
Yeah, you can't see where they are, and the way it zooms the ship in also makes it harder to navigate. Especially if you're like you're having a dogfight in an asteroid belt.
Yeah.
You are screwed because you just lost your field of vision.
That was one of my biggest issues. I didn't think it was something that really Star Fox did better. It was just something that Star Fox did. You know, not many companies really use the motion control aiming like Nintendo. And I don't blame them. It's weird. But
it's the, fact that they added motion controls, though. They
in general, And that's what I was going to go with there is I'm always in favor of things that give players more options. If you want it, then it's there. If it's not, then... If you don't want it, then just turn it off. But, you know, I am always in favor of things.
I'll agree with that. That was lame. Okay.
All things considered, it would not be the first time that Nintendo has given the reins of Star Fox to a third-party developer. The best example would be Star Fox Assault. Well, there are two examples, Star Fox Assault and Star Fox Command. Assault was made by Bandai Namco. I think they did a pretty good job of fixing what Rare broke. I don't hate Dinosaur Planet, but I do think that it broke Star Fox. And the way we perceive those games. The on-foot planet exploration was actually a hindrance to that franchise. On the flip side, one of my favorite Star Fox games is one that I don't think gets a lot of love, is Star Fox Command on the original DS. Star Fox Command was a phenomenal game, and it took a lot of risks. But we've seen Nintendo hand over the reins of Star Fox, and I think Ubisoft may have proven themselves to be the best hands. In my personal opinion, I think Ubisoft showed that, one, they could pay a crap ton of homage to Star Fox, and they did that by implementing traditional Star Fox controls into Starlink as the primary control scheme. You play Starlink like you play Star Fox 64 with one major change, and that's the barrel roll. That's pretty much it. Everything else feels Star Fox. So I do think that Ubisoft knows how to pay homage. And this isn't the first time that they've done it. Obviously, they did it with Mario Rabbids Kingdom Battle, and now they've worked that same kind of magic with the Star Fox missions. Whether or not they could do a larger scale Star Fox story remains to be seen. I don't know if they proved that with the story of the Star Fox missions in Starlink. That's where I think it would behoove Nintendo and Ubisoft to co-develop the game. So, I'm going to answer the question that we posed. Ubisoft did not save Star Fox from Nintendo. What Ubisoft proved was that they need Nintendo in order to fully realize what Star Fox can be. They need the level of precision that Nintendo puts into all of its games, like how everything is flawless for the hardware as far as visuals. And even if the story is limited, they know how to implement story properly into a game. But Ubisoft has shown that they know what direction the character needs to go in order to thrive. So in my opinion, personally, I don't think Ubisoft saved Star Fox. I think what they did was show the potential of Star Fox again. And in 2018, it's kind of weird to be talking about Star Fox and potential, considering that the franchise has existed for going on 20 years. But it shows that the character has potential to grow even to this day.
This is where I wanted to sort of talk about what has been plaguing the Star Fox series for a while. At the beginning, I mentioned this. And it's... So we look at, you know, Dino Planet, I guess, maybe the first one that really messed up is... It's gimmicky. That's... Being a Zelda game is a huge gimmick. And so it's adding things like gimmicks. It's the dying formula. Like we said before, the branching path, linear, rail shooter isn't as appealing as it was in the N64 era. And so those formulas are old, they're outdated, they haven't found a good footing on where to properly take this. In Star Fox Zero's case, it was I think the biggest issue was that it's a return to form, it's a reboot, it's a refresh, when it's not necessarily what they needed. And they didn't get it right even with that sort of refresh. And I think in Star Fox, Starlink Battle for Atlas's case, it's not that they maybe made a good Star Fox game, but Star Fox meshed well in Starlink. We're not playing Star Fox, and I would be hesitant to say that if Ubisoft made Star Fox, or even co-developed it, that they would make it good, per se. Because there's the problem of how do they take a full-fledged Star Fox? Do they add gimmicks to it? Would Nintendo, maybe if they co-developed it, want some kind of gimmick? It's adding the gimmicks, adding a better formula, just making the game right, I feel like, is still kind of tricky. Finding that footing that they've been struggling to find. I think, like we said, the open world exploratory formula of Atlas is cool, but I've mentioned before that I don't want that per se in my Star Fox game. I want that as my Starlink game. And so I'm hesitant still. I think there's still room for error. Ubisoft, it's not like they can't do no wrong. They can still screw it up. And I think that risk increases when they're given the chance to make a full game that's Star Fox rather than mesh Star Fox into their existing IP, Starlink.
I think you're onto something there, though. Like, because the big question is, you know, where do we take Star Fox now that we acknowledge that the format of the rail shooter is antiquated, right? Mm-hmm. And so I can give some credit to the dinosaur one, in that I'm sure they had the idea, like, okay, you know what, we got to give Star Fox some change up. Let's get him out of the actual out of the ships. So how are we going to do that? What sort of game core genre mechanic do we give him? And at the time, you know, Zelda would probably be the best fit, like, because it wouldn't be in a 3D platformer, right? That would have just been a bit more weird than Zelda. Like, third-person shooters were still kind of at the time, right? And first-person shooters were still kind of, I don't even know if they would do that for Star Fox. And so linking this back to now, Star Fox Zero kind of showed that it kind of works. Rail shooter kind of works, but kind of doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And so Starlink may be an indicator of where the kind of general direction where Star Fox kind of needs to go in order to evolve as just a general franchise, in order for it to all work. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think there's a push in the right direction to find that formula. I think they're honestly with that more modern open world exploratory. But I don't think that's exactly how I would want to take my Star Fox. I don't think that's how Nintendo wants to take it entirely. Yeah. I still think what I want right now is that racing game. I think that's what Nintendo should do, is that Star Fox racing game, get on it, make it great, and just have it get rid of Mario Kart, have Mario fly in our way. Like, come on, throw green shells in space. Come on. That's what I
don't know. What I kind of want is a system that's partially open world, but also instances where there's some rail mechanics, and also instances where you're outside of the ship using, like, third person Gears of War kind of cover mechanics, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like an actual shooter, a third person shooter maybe, but it's you have to get behind the wall and fire Fox's patented laser, you know?
Yeah.
Something I think that would be cool too.
But the balance for that would be very difficult.
I think what you'd want to do with something like that is have a hub universe, not a hub world, but have a hub universe, and you go to the mission area. And the mission areas would either be, you know, that linear on rails shooter or the get out on the ship and fire to complete the mission objective on foot.
I ultimately think that Star Fox, if we're going to use, like, the same kind of level structure as Starlink, Star Fox would benefit from side quests, like side missions, like similar to how, you know, games like Grand Theft Auto and other open world games apply them. Like, hey, you don't need to do this, but here's something that you can do in order to flesh out the experience and, you know, raise the level of your character and just do more within the game itself.
Yeah.
I think if you apply that to a game like Starlink, which Starlink has its side quests, but the variety of them there's not a whole lot of variety. You pretty much, your side quests remain the same after, once you've completed the first planet, you're not seeing anything new.
I want to try and almost compare the open worlds. I know it's a very drastic comparison, but compare the open worlds between Starlink and the upcoming, comes out this week, Red Dead Redemption 2, which Rockstar Games has got open world games down to a science at this point. And one of the best things by far about Red Dead Redemption is all those side quests. They're so varied, they're so fun, there's a lot of personality in them. And I'd like to see that, is how they handle side quests, and maybe look at how Starlink could put those side quest formulas into what they're doing.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, yeah, I said it earlier. Ubisoft did not save Star Fox. Star Fox can learn from Starlink, and I hope they do. I hope that Nintendo doesn't see the critical failure of Star Fox Zero and chooses to hold off on another installment in Star Fox. The character is beloved by, you know, its fan base.
And Melee fans.
The Star Fox fan base may be the most loyal fan base Nintendo has, because we have sat through some bad games. That we don't, typically Nintendo doesn't make bad games, but the Star Fox franchise seems to exist in its own realm. Somebody once made a joke to me that Star Fox is like the redheaded stepchild of the Nintendo IP. I think I love Star Fox, and I hope Nintendo really just learns that the character can be utilized in more ways than the ways that they themselves have tried.
Oh, actually, since we've talked about sort of handing the Star Fox IP off before, as well as other things, like we've talked about handing IP off, like Metroid and Donkey Kong, off to Retro Studios, one person or team or whatever that does a really good job at handing off franchises and establishing them, Masahiro Sakurai. Kid Icarus Uprising was a great direction for that game. And I would love to see what he could do. Yeah, I'd love to see what he could do with Star Fox. There's also a lot of love that he puts in for Smash and with the Fox characters.
I almost want to see what Rockstar would do with him. Honestly,
yeah. That's another reason why I kind of wanted to look at Red Dead Redemption 2. But
like, when you mentioned Red Dead Redemption 2, all of a sudden, the thought occurred to me, like, how interesting would it be to see a mature-rated Star Fox game with, like, hub worlds on Corneria where you can get out and beat hookers or something? But I wouldn't actually want to see Fox beat hookers. But you know what I'm saying? Like, like, dark content like that. You know what I mean? I don't know.
Like Wolf eating something's arm, right?
Yeah.
One thing that actually interests me more is how Rockstar would handle a intergalactic setting. We've seen them handle Old West, the sort of mafia noir eras, and the obviously modern city eras, but I don't think they've done a intergalactic space setting before, and I think that could be interesting.
That'd be interesting.
With all the homage that Star Fox pays to Star Wars, it would have been interesting to see LucasArts try their hand at a Star Fox game when they were still developing their own games.
Yeah,
that would have been interesting at that point in time. Obviously, we know that LucasArts no longer exists in the capacity that they did then, but it would have been interesting because a Knights of the Old Republic style Star Fox game could be
incredible. I think that would be cool too. Yeah, I think you could do a lot with what you were saying with the on ground stuff too. Would be nice in an old
format.
Yeah, that's the problem with like Star Fox Adventures is that
the format.
The way the game was built, it was never intended to be a Star Fox game. Miyamoto just kind of came and said, "Hey, that female fox looks like a Star Fox character. Why don't you just make this a Star Fox game?" And that style of development may work for Nintendo of Japan, but it clearly did not work for Rare.
Mm-mm.
Like, did not work for Rare, and I think Rare almost completely tanked the Star Fox franchise. And this is when Rare was making amazing games. This is like that era where we still considered Rare to be a top-tier AAA developer. And since that game, they have not been that. They have been the opposite of that. They are basically, they basically made kiddie games for Xbox. I'm talking about you, Viva Pinata.
Well, weren't they the ones behind Sea of Thieves, that new pirate game?
Maybe.
That's not Rare anymore. The,
the team behind Rare
is Yooka-Laylee.
No, you're right.
All the people that
work the name brand, not the same guys. You're right.
But yeah, I have nothing left to say on the topic. I think we pretty much covered what Ubisoft has done for the franchise and whether or not they save Star Fox. And I think we've made some good points as to where the franchise could go if it was to go outside of Ubisoft's hands and Nintendo's hands entirely. So I think I like this topic. I wanted to, I've been wanting to talk about Star Fox on this show since day one, but I could never figure out the capacity in which we could speak on the franchise. And I honestly think that because Starlink now exists and the best version of Starlink arguably would be the Switch version from at least a story aspect where you get more content out of it. I think this is finally the chance that this was the chance I've been waiting for to talk about Star Fox on the show. I've always loved this character and I've loved these games, but it's been a hard road to love these games. Like, this is like a broken relationship that you keep trying to make work and it doesn't necessarily work, but then there's that spark that keeps you with that person. And that's what Starlink did for me. Starlink reminded me of the reason why I loved it. So
yeah,
really glad I finally got a chance to talk Star Fox on this show. We'll probably be another, like, this is year three of the podcast, so probably another 3 years before I get the chance to talk about Star Fox in any capacity.
I mean, what, maybe Retro reveals what they're doing soon, and it happens to be that Star Fox game, and it's coming holiday 2019. You never know.
I don't even know if I want a racing game out of Star Fox. Though, like,
I mean, it's
I'm intrigued by the idea, but it's a racing game.
I love it. It's not what I want from Star Fox, but I want a racing game like that. Yeah.
Like, I'm more concerned with a Mario Kart 9 than a Star Fox Battle Racers or whatever they would call it.
I would want Super Mario Kart Maker is what I want from 9.
Like, that'd be kind of sick. Yeah,
that's all I want. They tried that with F-Zero for the GameCube. I don't think that worked too well.
Well, no, but things like Mod Nation Racers, Trackmania, Little Big Planet Kart Racing, those are solid course makers.
Yeah, yeah.
I forgot about Little Big Planet Racer.
Mm-hmm. I think they could if they tried it again. So.
All right. So, guys, we're going to go ahead and we're going to wrap this show up. But before we let you go, you know, we got to hit you up with these social media links. So, you can hit me up on Twitter at nice193. You can email me at nice193@gmail.com. You can hit us up on Facebook, facebook.com/NintendoPowerZone. If you're a fan of this podcast, you can download new episodes on iTunes, Google Play Music, stream new episodes on Stitcher Radio. But if you want to watch the show live like you're doing right now, you can catch us right here on YouTube, youtube.com/NintendoPowerZone. Guys, hit them up.
Okay, I'll go first. Yeah, as usual, you can hit me up at Jaden Winsong on Twitch, Twitter. Yeah, those are pretty much the only ones. And YouTube. And that's Twitter's the best one to get me at, though. So,
all right, you can follow me on Twitter at VKingBlues. That's the same for both YouTube and Twitch as well. Blues, as always, spelled BLOOZ, VKingBlues.
All right, so guys, that's going to wrap it up. Thank you guys so much for watching, and remember, stay fresh. Yeah.
Let's go.